You are listening to Words with a Mad Coach. I am Mad Coach. I am Mad Coach. I am Mad Coach. Coach Sess. Coach Sess. I am Mad Coach. I am Mad Coach. I am Mad Coach. Coach Sess. Coach Sess. You are listening to Words with a Mad Coach. Mad World starting the week off, and I am here. First day, right after Fight For It 20. And we are continuing fight season. We are jumping right into this thing. And we are also looking at other shows coming up. The season is starting to fill up, man. We're moving into the spring, moving into the summer. And we've got Fight For It talking about, hey, we're going to do our next show in Charlotte. So if you want to get on that card, hit up Marcelo now. Just in a couple of weeks, we've got Summer of Fighting Championships down in Durham. We know that Lightning Strikes is going to return in August. Let's see. There's a show in Hope Mills. Forgive me for the name of it. I just know who's helping out with that show. So, you know, the fight season is on. It's starting to return. A lot of people are getting involved. We're going to have a lot of new fighters. I know Josh Oxidine, he's got his show, Ox MMA. It's a lot of MMA shows starting to pop back up. It's boxing, kickboxing. My friend Pat Finkland, boxing coach, he's helping out that show in Hope Mills, but he has his own boxing show as well. And so it's just a lot happening. I wouldn't be surprised if we start seeing more from PKBs, combat sambo, combat jujitsu. So like I said, it's plenty out there. There's no excuse why you're not able to get something somewhere. We got really good mega matchups. People starting to put their names in the hat. We've got D Reddick and Jacob Paez, you know, talking on the internet, coming at one another. I mean, it's a lot of good stuff happening right now. A lot of good stuff in the makes. It's in the shake. And we got to see what's going to happen with it. That's the most important part. We got to see what's going to happen with it. I want to talk about missing weight. I may have, but, you know, that's a big issue where people talk about, do you have a real weight advantage when the opponent comes in a different weight? And I saw that when Jacob Paez and D Reddick were talking, It was a little tongue in cheek on Jacob's part when he was saying, hey, we'll do this at 175. You know, I think he was just playing around. I don't think he needs to fight that heavy. Also, he was talking about maybe fighting in Virginia versus, you know, say North Carolina, South Carolina, because I think South Carolina is what D Reddick was saying. Hey, you've got until September. Because I think that's a show that Fight For It's going to do in South Carolina. And I like that idea. And I'll tell you why. Nothing about the weight. So the idea I have for that fight would be, hey, fight at the weight class of 155. You both have fought there. You both can make the weight. And what I like about that fight in September, if that's where, you know, Fight For It's going to put the show on, 155 for the title. Now, I know Reddick said, hey, we don't need to go for the title. I like the title idea because I said yesterday, man, both of these guys, they could be good as a main event, but you got to have a purpose. You got to have a reason. There's got to be stakes. There's got to be something on the line that you're chasing, something that the other guy can lose. So I like the idea of the title being on the line at 155 in South Carolina. I want to say that fight might be in Rock Hill. That would give the hometown advantage, yes, to D Reddick. But here's why that's such a good thing. It's because the Paez brothers do such a good job of making themselves the heels, making themselves the bad guys. Crowds will follow them. And just giving some advice to the Paez brothers, if you can get people to follow you, you will have an automatic built-in crowd when it's time to go home.
right now, I'm not 100% sure that they've built in enough of a hometown base, because they do go from gym to gym. They have lived in different places. I would love to see them build themselves, and because they are able to get the response that they have now by just going to different places like UBG to Fight for Red in Charlotte, in Winston-Salem, in Raleigh. That's showing me something. These guys can command crowds. So I think they need to do this fight in South Carolina. A victory there will seal the deal. Then if you want to have that fight in Greensboro, it's going to be huge. If you want to have that fight in Burlington, it's going to be huge. So in my opinion, if the Baez brothers want to fight, or excuse me, Jacob Baez wants to fight D. Reddick, that fight needs to be in South Carolina. It needs to happen in South Carolina. And I'm talking the dollars and cents here. I'm not talking about the rules of the fight. I'm not talking about, because I understand what he wants from VA, whether he wants to talk about elbows and knees and all that. I get that. I'm 100% understanding. So let's not kid ourselves. Let's talk business first. It's not, you can't fight at 175 pounds. That doesn't make sense. Fighting with elbows and knees, that's down the line anyway. Let's do the South Carolina. Let's get that fight out of the way with D. Reddick. It's a huge fight. It's a huge opportunity. And the thing is, D. Reddick's giving you that opportunity. D. Reddick's saying, okay, here it is. Let's go in September. And we go in September, and you meet this obligation, guess what, man? I'm going to, you know, give you that fight that you're looking for. And I guarantee you this will be the start of Jacob Paez's true career. And what I mean by that he has proven to himself, he'll prove to a lot of people that specifically, because he'll headline that fight. That's one of the things that would be amazing if the Paez brothers, in such a short period of time, can come on and actually headline a show. If they can come on and headline a show with where they've come from, everything that they caused and everything that they started, they have to get a good feel of the magic that they really command. This is a huge opportunity. I would not worry about Virginia or fight rules right now. The next status needs to be South Carolina, D. Reddick, and it could be an amateur headline. That's how good of a fight that would be, because of the real energy between them. And even if you do have a pro, they need to be the pro, the headline in terms of whatever is on the amateur card. They have to be right there. So I think that's a wonderful opportunity. And the promo from D. Reddick, I thought about that thing. I said, man, D. Reddick's got a personality. I mean, when I interviewed Reddick, I loved his energy. I loved his timing, the way he talks. I loved his ideas. But he had the shirt. He had the tone. He had the setup. I was like, yo. And then he was like, even giving props. He was like, yo, El Totoro, you did your thing. I got to give you props, blah, 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 blah. You know, he's really set this up. I mean, he just handed Fight for It a softball pass, and all they got to do is knock it out of the park. If they fail at this, then I'm going to be like, hey, Marcelo, me and you, because this one's easy. I know they got the Charlotte show coming up, but this is not a Charlotte fight. This would be huge in South Carolina. I'm telling you, I think a lot of that idea, a huge fight for them at such an early stage in their careers, and with the title on the line. Super impressed. But like I said, today we are talking about weight cutting, and we look at an incident that just recently happened, but I do want to talk about weight cutting, and does it really give you an advantage? Do you really have an advantage when you cut the weight? And we're looking at, say, 1 to 3 pounds. Do you have a real advantage at 1 to 3 pounds? We're not going to be talking about 10 pounds advantage, because I have shared the story that when I fought in the early days of MMA, it was the Wild Wild West. You can fight guys 30 pounds bigger than you. All right, I've done it. I've actually had my opponent switched on me the day of the fight. Like, in other words, I drive in and the guy who is supposed to, that I'm supposed to fight, is changed the day I drive in. I don't even know about this change until I get to the show. So apparently the guy that I was supposed to fight pisses off the promoter. The promoter changes the fight and he puts my guy in with a different guy. And he ends up fighting a 135er. The fight was supposed to be at 180. He ends up fighting a 135er. And I end up fighting a 235er. I'm not making this up. In the beginning days, MMA was the Wild Wild West. And the place where this was in Virginia. Now it's a lot more solidified now. And I beat the guy. Don't get me wrong. I beat the guy. But I will say this. I don't want to say weight doesn't matter because I beat the guy. And I don't want to say that because I have fought bigger guys before and beaten them, but it was more strategy. And the other thing is, especially in the early days of MMA, you have to say it. I mean, a lot of guys don't want to say it from the old days because they want to live in the glory. A lot of those guys were not good. You've always heard that phrase, a good big man will always beat a good little man, unless the good little man is better. If the good little man is better, he will beat a good big man, or a decent big man, or an average subpar big man. A lot of guys were not, you know, the star-studded athletes that we see now. When MMA became a little bit more structured and it became the occupation of a lot of athletes, a lot of guys just got better. There's nothing you can do about that. They just got better. So no, I'm not going to sit here and say that there is no advantage for a guy who's coming in, but we have to understand what is the advantage. For instance, when you have fighters that already have experience, can we honestly say that, okay, this guy's got 2 pounds, 3 pounds advantage. Is it going to make a difference in the fight? Well, I reached out to some guys this morning, you know, to try to get some, so my man, Chris Stanso, always being, sending me a message saying Chris, are you saying you're going through a weight cut right now? Yeah. Yeah, I think you are going through a weight cut. What for? You want to fight? You fighting anybody soon, Chris? Anybody fighting anybody soon and going, Chris saying he's a terrible weight cutter. He, you know what? He might be. He might be. Chris says he's fighting June 29th, it looks like. June 29th. Okay, what show is that, Chris? Is that Hope Mills? I don't know that show. He's cutting from 205. K-Zilla, 205 to 170. Jesus, Chris. Jeez, son. Damn. That was a big weight cut. And today's May? Son, I thought we talked about this, man. Keep your weight in check. Keep your weight in check. Anyway, I sent a message out this morning, and I got one back from Coach Finklin. And, you know, I was really, because I know he's dealing more with boxers. So the questions I was asking about is weight cutting. Do you get an advantage? And I was also talking about, should we have contracts for amateurs? So let's hear what he has to say. And keep in mind, I don't have my phone plugged in. So this is coming direct from the microphone.
As far as contracts for the amateurs, when my guys get ready to compete, I have them do kind of like an agreement saying what's required for them for the fight as far as weight, drug use, eating right, all that. So they know as a requirement to train for competition, they have to follow those rules at all times. And for us, 1 to 3 pounds, it doesn't make a difference because even with USA Amateur Boxing, there's always a weight allowance. Even on the pro side, there's a weight out allowance that two fighters can be within a certain amount of pounds to fight each other. But I personally don't think 1 to 3 pounds makes a difference in a fight.
Yeah, and that's how I feel about it. For those who may not have known, but at Fight For It 20, a lot of fights got cut out because of a weight discrepancy. We're not exactly sure of all the details of every fight, but in one particular fight, we heard that one guy was over by 3 pounds. And I wasn't there. So the way I got the story was the commission approved the fight because in MMA, they kind of look at that idea of the weight class. And as long as you're 5 pounds within one another, then it's a good thing. And there are some concerns. I reached out to smaller fighters. I reached out to people who are coaches. I reached out to people who run promotions. Coach Finklin is a coach, and he's also, like I said, starting up his own boxing promotion. I think he's already done one show. And so he would have some insights. But I like the idea of, you know what, at least with the guys that I train, let me write up a personal contract saying, this is what you're going to do to honor the agreement to be on the show or to go to a fight so that we walk in as professionals. I like the idea of a contract maintaining weight just for the perspective of knowing that you went through the fire, you did everything you needed to do, and then in your mind, you're confident. You're super confident. You're not worried about having an advantage. I think you can go in with such a huge advantage that it can be a disadvantage. So yeah, you can go in with the weight being big, but then if you haven't really worked on your skills because you're dependent on being bigger, then what happens when that guy says, I'll take the weight cut anyway. I'll take whatever you weigh in at. I'll take your size. And then he starts to beat on you. You're going to lose your confidence. Put this out, Ralston, the Boogeyman Thompson, Thomas, my bad, Ross, but sent me a message talking about weight. And he says, you know, it can go either way. It can be an advantage or a disadvantage. The Boogeyman comes in with interesting insight, sent me a message that says, if the opponents are closely skilled, then the bigger man will probably win. If they're closely skilled, because that goes back to what I was saying earlier about the big man versus a good little man. But if he's too big, didn't train hard enough, cut too much weight, it could be a disadvantage on his cardio. It just depends. And what he means by that is you rehydrate and then you shoot beyond the weight that you trained at. So let's say you're 170. That's your weight class, right? And in the gym, when you sparred, when you trained, you were, say, 190. That's where you did most of your camp at. You did 190. But after you weigh in, somehow you overshoot and you weigh back in at 205, hint, hint, somebody. And you didn't train at that. Now, yeah, you're going to have that extra pop in the beginning for round one, but you have all this extra baggage that wasn't in the camp. And so you're going to overshoot it and you could potentially put too much behind every shot. You're going to get fatigued because you weren't used to carrying that weight around. Now you got this extra weight. It's going to give you an advantage for a split second, but it's not sustainable. So yeah, you can put too much back on sometimes. You know, the thing about weight cutting, because we've heard this from a lot of professionals, weight cutting is a science. And it's so much better today than what it used to be. Number one, because fighters have done so much of it. Coaches, fighters have gotten smarter. And two, because there's so many more events that do it, they all have their own little techniques and they share information. And because there are more medical people involved in these games now, in these fights, in these genres, they've gotten super careful and meticulous about what should happen, what shouldn't happen. If you look across the board, in different associations that say, oh, we don't allow this much rehydration. We don't allow this much time, or we offer this. That can tell you that it's become a science now. And it's almost an exact science, you know, not across the board, But there are some definitive measures out there that says you need to do this in a certain way and consider, you know, the pros and consequences of this and that, you know. And I think a lot of people aren't doing that. They aren't doing that. And unfortunately, the people that pay the price the most are the amateurs, because your coach can be an amazing kickboxer, jiu-jitsu player, MMA fighter in his heyday, but it doesn't mean that he was a good fitness guy. You understand? And so his idea of just going to the sauna, you know, cutting weight, the idea of training it off by doing extra sessions per day, the idea of, you know, basically just telling you physical exertion is all that you need. And that won't always be the case, because you have to take in consideration body type, consideration of the time of fight, you know, the time length of the fight. Also, you have to take into consideration the age of the fighter. If you're 19, 20, and you're cutting weight a certain way, and you're fighting, let's say, up until you're 22, 23, then life takes over. And you just stop fighting for a while. We're not talking skills here. We're not talking abilities. But you're just not fighting for a while. You just put things on hiatus. A good example of that would be Cody Reese, you know, putting things on hiatus because of life. Wasn't losing, you know, at the time that he put his life on, put his fight life on hold. He wasn't losing. He wasn't hurt. He was bored. He'll tell you the story. So Cody takes his time off. And when he comes back, he's had a hard time getting back to 155. We really haven't seen him make 155 yet. He has not been at the 155 mark since he's returned back to the fighting cage. He's not made it back yet. Because now that he's getting older, what happens is, you know, your metabolism works a little bit differently now. And when you take that time off, your body changes. The fight game changes. Your opponents change. You know, it's not like he's getting easy opponents and just walking through them. So his fights, his ability to cut that weight has changed tremendously, and now is impacting his overall game. I got another clip from my buddy James Quigg. James trained with me for a long time. He's always been relatively a small fighter. And he took into consideration everything I had to say. And let me see if I can find that clip. And he had... And speaking of the contracts, a lot of these guys that I did reach out to, they came from that time frame, that era when, yeah, you had to have the contract. That was the thing. You had to have the contract. I remember Michael Allen with Fight Lab. All you ever had, all you ever got was a contract. Everybody. And I'm not sure why the commission has stopped taking contracts. That's probably another conversation that I need to have with someone specific to the commission. And that's another thing. You guys, the fighters, you coaches, you guys have been doing a wonderful job calling in, emailing me, messaging me. You've helped me get this platform. We're up to about on an average of 600 listeners a month. We're pushing at the 6,000 total. We're doing a really good job. But I've not had anybody from the commission really give me some good feedback. Now, when I meet them in person, they're good people. When I meet them, they're nice. They're cordial. They have a lot of insights. But I want to get them on this platform so they can give us their perspective out loud. And almost bookend it so that we can say, okay, this is what we're going to be doing forever. But here's James Quigg talking about, you know, his perspectives on weight and contracts.
Ultimately, the impact of a weight difference at the weigh-ins has a lot to do with how great the weight difference is when the fighters aren't at weigh-ins. You know, if you have a situation of someone like me who walks around at that used to walk around at 150, 155, fighting at 35, and I end up fighting against someone who walks around at 160, 165, and then they cut down, and they only cut down to 140, 143, and I'm there at 137. We've resulted in two fighters with more different builds than the weight classes is intended, like exactly the sort of things that the system of weight class is intended to intervene on. So it's one of those things where you're right, Coach, you fought people who are more than 30 pounds difference. I think one of the things that we've talked about before is how height can almost be more of a concern than the weight. And when people are cutting those weight is when people are cutting that weight and not letting it, and like the fights are getting accepted, even with the weight cut, then you're ending up with these folks who are taller and longer fighting people who may have been in that weight class to avoid fighting that size difference anyway. But then there's also the impacts. It's kind of avoiding the drawback of, okay, if you want to be the taller and bigger fighter, you've got to go through the more grueling weight cut. And if they just don't, and I'm expected to take the fight anyway, I'm fighting at that detriment. So that's some of my thoughts about what's going on around the weight cut and fighters coming up in overweight and expecting to be able to fight anyway. They're kind of counting on the psychology of the sunk cost of, hey, I've already done the full weight cut. I've already done all the work to get ready for this fight. I'm not going to back out now just because the other person came in overweight. And then they're hoping to carry an advantage into the fight.
Very solid points. And the two biggest points, the two takeaways that I took away from that was him absolutely saying this. You cutting down to avoid fighting taller people is legit. It's a strategy to that. But then the issue is now you have everybody cutting down so they can have the advantage to be the taller guy. They're cutting down to certain weight classes so they can actually be the longer, taller person in that weight class. When we look at guys like Sean O'Malley, one of the keys to his game is the fact that he is the range finder. He owns the range at the 35 division. He's just one of the taller guys. John Jones owns the range when he was at 205 until other 205ers showed up. But we honestly can look at some of these guys and say, yeah, their build. We're not talking about any other evidence. Like they used to fight at this weight class and they shrunk down or they came from another sport. No, you can look at some person's build and say, yeah, that guy's a legit heavyweight fighting at 205. Ralston Thomas talked about to me like, hey coach, you think I can make 70? It all depends on what he walks around at. If he walks around at 205, I would say, man, I wouldn't go for 70 now and this late in your career, but 85 serves him well. But if he walks around at 90, yes, he could do 70 because he's relatively tall and that would give him a huge advantage. But then there are some people who need to fight down anyway, because like James, when he fought, yeah, he walked around 150, 160, but he fought at 35. Because not to get the advantage, but to get away from the guys who had those advantages. See, he wanted to fight on more fair terms. So that could work against you. The other thing he said is the psychology. You know, the thing about weight sometimes is you put guys on blast and you're almost calling them out like you're a punk bitch if you don't take this fight. And a lot of guys have taken fights with a weight difference being called out. So when Shelton Sales took his guys and they left fight for at 20, can you say they were wrong? No, because as a coach, you have to do what's in the best interest of your fighter at the time. Now, I relate this story to you know, the people who don't know, but this story is a true story. I have the video of it. It really did happen. Nick Grady was fighting in Virginia, and I forget the opponent, Sean something right now, but and it was at Spartica. And Jimmy, the promoter, the owner of the fight show, does not have fighters. He didn't have a gym. So he had no invested interest one way or the other. He took us all into a room. He says, "You guys talk it out. You guys figure it out." So apparently the day of weigh-ins, which was the Friday night, Deshaun shows up and he's 10 pounds overweight. Nick and the team said, "Okay, you know what? Cut 5 pounds. Now, again, I'm telling the story secondhand, so I don't know all the details because I wasn't there the night of. I was there the next day. So apparently he comes in and he's 15 to 20 pounds heavier. So the next day he's 15, 20 pounds heavier when they were already saying all you had to do is cut 5 and we'll let you still fight. He comes in and he's even heavier than the day before. So this is the day that I am there, and everybody's there. Everybody's there to see Nick defend his title, and they were the main event. And so what happened was Jimmy took us all into a room and said, "You guys talk it out, figure it out." So we took all the participants from both teams, and I told Nick, "Whatever you decide, I got your back. I'll support you 100%. In other words, my brain was already thinking, what are the strategies here? What could we do? How could we beat this guy? Because for this particular camp, I was Nick's primary sparring partner. So I outweighed Nick a good 60 pounds. So I spent my time, my days in and out for several weeks, close to 4 weeks at least, being his primary sparring partner. He didn't have anybody else. There was nobody doing shark tanks. It was just me and him. So whatever he wanted to do, I wanted to do. Well, Nick turns out to be a genius. I'm listening. He says, "Okay, this is what we're going to do." He says, "First of all, there's no title shot." He says, "Now we go from 3 5-minute rounds to 3 3-minute rounds." Okay, I'm thinking that's intelligent. So I'm thinking that's it right there. Then he goes, "No title shot, 3 3-minute rounds." And then he says, "And we're the first fight of the night." I thought, this guy understands the game. The reason you wanted to be the first fight of the night, now you don't give this guy any more time to hydrate or to prepare. So the first fight of the night was like within 30 minutes. So we go back to the dressing room because Nick's already gloved up. We got him wrapped up and everything, ready to go. And within the next 30 minutes, boom, they're in the cage. And Nick wins by split decision. But when you look at the fight, honestly, I thought Nick won unanimously. But when you look at the fight, Nick wasn't hurt by anything that Deshaun Boatwright, that was his name. He was never really hurt by anything that he did. It's a fight. Of course, there was a kick here and there. Of course, there was a punch here and there. But Nick gave the bulk of those punches and kicks. So the weight issue is just a factor that, again, based on your preparation, I don't think it's that big of a deal. You know, if there's a perceived disadvantage for one person, it just depends on how they prepared. Because one of the reasons that I forget what fight it was, it might have been Mayweather and Marquez. And Marquez got a little bit of pop. Marquez has went several rounds with Pacquiao, who has pop. And when Mayweather came in a little heavier, I think he came in 3 pounds heavy and gave up $3 million in a fight where he was making $20 million. I believe that Mayweather took on the extra weight and lost the money because it gave him a cushion. Because Mayweather wasn't known in the second half of his career, he wasn't a knockout artist because he had hand issues. So the factor for the weight wasn't so much that it was going to give Mayweather more punching ability as much it was going to give him the ability to absorb impact, which is what I thought was smart. If Marquez went for it, and he did take the money, and he wasn't able to really hurt Mayweather, and he lost the fight. Because I don't think the extra weight made Mayweather faster. Mayweather was already naturally faster. I honestly believe that he fought and trained at that weight and got fast and stayed fast at that weight and training. because the extra weight is not going to give him an advantage in that regard. You know, it actually would be better for Marquez to cut some weight and be the faster guy. But I thought that the smart thing was that Mayweather was able to absorb some impact. And I think if I remember this correctly, Mayweather was naturally taller than Marquez anyway. So there was some defensive advantages. You know, it's kind of like when the guys get drugged up and then they get suspended because they believe that the drugs would allow them to not feel pain. Well, gaining weight will do the same thing, because one of the reasons that I was Nick Grady's primary sparring partner was because it was such a short period of time for him to get ready that there were only a few people that could hard spar with him. And so the only person I really trusted to hard spar and not hurt the fighter and still take the impact was me. I was like, okay, I'm not going to hit him as hard as I can because I hate hurting fighters. I honestly, I'm not one of those coaches whose ego is so big that I want to break my trainee's leg or anything like that going into a fight. But I also had to have the ability to absorb his energy. And I couldn't find anybody in the gym at the time who could do it. Were there better skilled fighters? Yes, I think Mike Pagano was around at that time, but Mike was still relatively small to Nick. Ricky Saxton was around, but I think Ricky, again, relatively small, slightly as tall as I am, but not build-wise. So I didn't care about people hitting Nick. I needed somebody who could take his impact. So that just fell upon me. I didn't have anybody close to Nick's size and skill who could do it. I either had size and no skill, or had skill but didn't have size. So I said, you know what? This is one of those times when I'm not the coach anymore. And I became his sparring partner and said, I'll give you feedback, but I can't train you per se because I'm going to be defending myself. I'm not looking from the outside. So yes, weight cuts can be an advantage if you pack a few pounds on, and it gives you a defensive advantage. Because honestly, when Nick was fighting Boatwright, in the right scenario, Nick would have knocked Boatwright out, because Boatwright's punches and kicks, like I said, didn't hurt Nick more than Nick's hurt him. So had Boatwright came in on weight, had he made the requirement, it's a possibility that Nick would have knocked him out or finished him in rounds one or two. I believe that. Ace Hill, professional fighter, also fighter that I've worked with and trained. And Ace has got a different perspective because, he's training. He's in school right now to be a doctor. And so he's got a background. He's got a degree in the sports science. So he's got a perspective that we're going to play and listen to what he has to say about. I listened to half of this already, so I haven't heard the whole thing. But I thought, man, he's got some good insights and some of the things that he said. It was really, really, really good.
It's funny, actually. I was just kind of having a thought process about the second half of the question about the contracts of amateurs. But when I think it comes to with the weight classes, the 3 to 5 pound difference, it more so goes with the recovery and the rehydration process, because they're not going to be as dehydrated. They're not going to be as beat down as an individual that actually got the weight all the way down. They're not going to be as fully sucked out. So which means their recovery rate, their metabolic rate, all that, you know, all the fun science words that people like to say, is going to be at a higher level than the other opponent that kind of has basically starved themselves. So when it comes time for the fight, they're going to be that 10, 15, even probably more likely 20% more rested, recovered, and fueled than their opponent. And that's where you start to see that advantage. And also the glycogen levels and the muscles, they're able to kind of exert a bit more force and have some more endurance because they didn't suck as much of that essential, I guess, essence out of their body. And then honestly, I do think at some level the contracts are required, I think, but it comes when it's higher level amateurs, because as we start to try and classify our sport to be at a high level organization or at a higher level entity, everybody knows that the UFC is like the equivalent of like the NBA, the NFL, so on and so forth. So then it kind of goes down to, how do you classify the regional scenes as pros? Do you put that as like a collegiate, or is it slightly above collegiate? Or is it more along the lines of like the XFL and things like that, like our basketball players that play overseas? Because then that would state it that the amateur fighters are going to be at that collegiate level or in the early level, amateurs would be on that high school JV thing. So I think when it comes down to things like that, it kind of would be necessary, but I think that's more so on the advanced amateur side, as you kind of start to see that separation, if we're going to kind of base it on how we do it with mainstream sports. And I think that is kind of where the importance might be, because you can start to have a bit more professionalism as you start to rise through the ranks, as you get to those higher level regional amateur shows that also have, you know, probably have pro fights as well.
That's my two takeaways: professionalism and recovery. Those, when I first listened to that, I was like, I had not considered recovery. Like, because, you know, both guys weigh in, both guys are given that opportunity to rehydrate. But I hadn't considered the fact that one guy is going to rehydrate a little bit better because he didn't have to make such a strenuous cut. And he has those reserves, you know, in his muscles. So it could be a 15 to 20% advantage for that fighter. And I agree with Ace on that. What I won't agree with is the unknown. To me, I think those advantages lie, as Ralston Thomas said, why am I killing Ralston's name today? I believe that those advantages happen if they're close. So let's say I'm dealing with a guy with a 70% knockout ratio, and the other guy is 80% knockout ratio. Yeah. Him getting a 15 to 20% rest in his muscles might bring him up. It's going to give that guy a little bit of a boost. He's no longer 70%. He might be able to fight within the range of 80, 85%. Might even be better than me. Because remember, I had thought about that. You're fighting, you're getting 80% knockout ratio after you cut weight. So you're just slightly better than most of the guys you fight. And that's why you finish them. But now you run into a situation where a guy doesn't cut that much weight and he's normally at 70%, but this particular fight, he keeps a few pounds back. He's hoping that you accept the fight. He's playing you. He's calling your names and you get mad and you say yes. But what you fail to realize is he's able to gain about 7 to 15% more in recovery, and boom, he's pushing. He's able to push power just a little bit more because he's not as fatigued. He's not as tired. And to the point I made earlier, he might even have added some layers that give him some impact that allow him to defend against your heavy blows that you throw out. So yeah, I can see it. I can clearly see it. But I also like what Ace was saying about when it comes to contracts. The idea of the contract is mainly on the promotion, like James was saying. It's mainly on the promotion. It's like, guys, if you do the contracts, do them across the board, be consistent, because it's going to reflect back in you as a promotion. I think when Michael Allen and Fight Lab were doing them consistently, I think a lot of people liked that idea because it gave it an air of professionalism, and you almost had the word locked in, locked out. And I think a lot of people say, well, I'd rather fight for that organization because it's not going to be the Wild Wild West. I'm going to get something that's more definitive. And it gave them a sense of confidence. I like the idea of contracts myself, pros and amateurs. It just seemed like something was set in stone. You weren't going to get a lot of shenanigans. You know, I tried to pay attention to how many words inside the contract that were vague, how many things could be interpreted 12 different ways. I wanted to stay away from that. So I like the idea of the contract, creating that era, that aura, I should say, of professionalism. And I'm trying to think, was there anywhere that I fought in Virginia or dealt with? I think Spartica had contracts at one time. They had contracts for their amateurs. I know they had them for their pros because I've set up several fights there and I dealt with the contract side of it. But as far as the amateurs, Spartacus is the only one I can really think of that had contracts. All the other stuff, when Brent Pierce was running Elite Value 2.0, Brent was a friend. that was just a gentleman's agreement. Brenton also knew that if I said I'm bringing this guy, I'm bringing that guy. If I said I'm fighting, I'm fighting. Let me tell you, like, I fought on Brent's show. Brent called me up and said, hey, you want to fight this guy? All right, so me and the guy, we fought. Was that the first time or the second time? I think this was the second time me and this guy was fighting. And it was supposed to be a rematch. Because in the first time, he said, or at least it was interpreted, that I kicked him in the face from the ground in Virginia. Wow. But he was on his knees. And so I threw a kick from the bottom. He was able to take me down. I threw a kick from the bottom, and I hit him in the shoulder. So everybody saw it on the video. I hit him in the shoulder, but he played the whole deal up like he got kicked in the face. And so the fight was stopped early or something like that, you know, and he claimed he couldn't continue. So this was a rematch. And I want to say that it was the day of or the week of, the fight had been changed. He didn't want to do a full rules mixed martial arts fight with me. And my coach at the time was Pat Monet, my kickboxing coach. And he said, oh, he felt that jab from the first fight. Because I just kind of danced around with my hands down and just pow, just came out with a jab just like that. And it landed and he shot in. And so Pat's theory was he must have remembered that. And so in this particular fight, you know, it became a grappling match. And so we had to wear the gloves, the whole nine yards. Greg Thompson cornered me. Nonetheless, I ended up breaking the guy's arm. I broke his arm. And I can tell you right now, like, I usually do okay with guys' weights when they're bigger than me. But in this particular fight, as a grappling match, his weight made a difference. I mean, I could tell that he was just a slightly bigger. So when he was able to shoot in on me, I was able to sprawl. And this time, I was the guy on top. And so I was able to catch him in the Kimura and break his arm. But Brent worked with me. And that's what I like about having that relationship or having that contract. It kind of gives you a little bit of edge where you can say what happens, what doesn't happen, because I did not want to have a grappling match, but there was nobody else to fight. And it was either do that or the fight was off the table. And since it was an amateur fight anyway, I'd already put so much into it, I took the grappling match. And I didn't, by the way, I didn't try to break his arm. The guy's defense to the armbar was just to try to extend his arm. I had him in a Kimura, and he just extended his arm. I couldn't believe he was able to do it. But as he was trying to extend it, Greg Thompson was telling me, hold what you got, bro. Hold, you got good position. You got good form. And it just rotated around my fulcrum and pop, 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 pop. I thought that was the nastiest thing I'd ever felt. The nastiest thing I ever felt. And the guy just goes, ah, that was it. He just yells out one time. So I like the idea of having something solidified, something written out. I think it makes much more sense. Now I'm hearing this and thinking about this. Now I'm going to just start paying attention to the different shows and reach out to the promoters. Are you using contracts? And if so, what problems has it resolved for you? And if not, why aren't you using contracts? Because here's the thing. You're using something to get a certain result. And if you're not getting that result, then we're not sure why you're doing it at all. That's what makes the most sense. You're doing it for a purpose. You're getting a result, or it simply does not work, or it doesn't, or does it make sense at all? And that's what I'm after. Does it make sense? Let's see. I think he sent me more clips. So let's see what else he has to say. And in these clips, I have not heard him at all. I just got these, like, just before I came on, I got these, or I saw these.
And another reason that I'm more pro contracts for amateurs is also for the medical reasons, because as we all know, fighting is an unforgiving sport, and you lose more money than you ever earn as a martial artist for the most part. Especially when it comes to the amateur circuit, they're paying for blood work, they're paying for their physical, they're paying for the vision, whatever it might be required for that promotion, for that state, whatever, you know, the governing body requires. I think that with the state of contracts, you can have it where, because I know I've fought in some states where they're like, oh, if you receive ticket sales as a form of compensation, then you're considered a pro. I think that's one of the things that they can kind of outline in the contracts specifically as you start to transition between lower level regional scenes to higher level regional scenes. Like, I think that it can kind of have some more protection. Like, if the athlete gets injured in the match, you know, it's detailed outlined in that contract, like, hey, the promotion is going to cover your medical fees if you sustain an injury from this time to this time, and here's your reporting period for this injury, so on and so forth, versus pretty much what we have now is a whole lot of handshakes, a lot of words of mouth. And that's kind of why I think we start to see a lot of discord and a little bit of a lack of professional management, especially when it comes to the amateur MMA and even like the mid-level pro side, because there's too many handshake agreements and too many of good faith agreements on how things should be ran.
You know what? Ace sent me a lot, but I'm not going to play all of them because he's right about that. There is a lot of handshaking, and we agreed to do not, that this will happen. I like the idea of the contracts because we had two fighters at the show who had something that looked like injuries. And I suggested, hey, go talk to the promoter if you need to go to the hospital. I think Mark Foster said he was feeling a little bit of a concussion. I said, you need to go to the hospital now because they get the insurance for a reason. So after a show, I think that insurance is good for like 7 days. I want to say 7 days. It could be 30, but it's good for 7 days. So if you feel a little concussed, go to the hospital. I think one of the Paez brothers said his hand was hurting. Hey, that's why the promoter has to have that insurance to even run the show. So take full advantage of it. And I think what Ace was saying in that clip right there, if the fighters don't know, it's because they don't have it written down anywhere. It's not in the contract. Your coaches can know, but that all depends on the coaches being experienced. I did see several coaches at the show Saturday who looked a little young to be coaches, who looked a little inexperienced, and they might have been confused about really what to do, because there's more to it than just showing up with a towel on your shoulder and carrying a bucket. So I think Ace has got dead on. Let's get the contracts, because in the contract, it's going to say, if this should happen, go do this. If you want a hotel room, keep in mind, like in some places, like if they provide you with certain things like hotel and travel, it's not free money. So in other words, if you get in there and you destroy the room, well, that responsibility is back on you. They've taken care of you. You don't owe them anything. But if you destroy the room, if you destroy furniture, if you destroy equipment, that is back on you. Same thing with travel. They say, yeah, we'll give you money for travel. If they do that, but you're 25 minutes late to the weigh-ins, if you're 25 minutes late to any appointment affiliated with the fight, and the commission charges you for that, that's on you. So you have to meet your requirements. That's the only thing about a contract, is the promotion has requirements that they're going to fulfill. Now you have requirements that you need to fulfill. So, but I still say it's better to have that contract. One of the comments I heard about our commission, and I tend to agree with him, I'd rather have it deal with people a little bit stern, people who have details written out, because, yeah, it's frustrating, but you don't want it to be the Wild Wild West when you can just keep changing the rules from minute to minute, second to second. So, yeah, the North Carolina Commission is a little tough, but I'd rather have it than the Wild Wild West, because I've been in those situations and they can change things up on the drop of a hat, and you have no idea where this information is coming from. Because just like a story I told with Nick Grady, being able to go into a room and make the fight different based on a gentleman's agreement, based on the idea of let's just switch some things up. I've never had that happen before. That was just new. That was just something you just go right into a room and we can sit down and decide whether or not we're going to have this fight or not. The fighters agreed that to do that. Nowhere in history has that ever really happened, you know, well, other than Wild Wild West times. But because normally what should have happened, if you had a sanctioning body, you would have the sanctioning body saying, no, here's the rules and this is what's going to happen. Or you have the promoter saying, I'm the head figure in charge. This is what's going to happen. That's not what happened. Jimmy said, Team A and Team B, you guys talk it out. He said, Team A and Team B, you guys talk it out. So the contract, you know, it can be something in a form of leverage. I just think what should be included, we should also have something from the promoter saying that if we meet our agreement, we meet the requirements, and Team B does not meet the requirements, then what is the promoter going to do for us? Because like I said, the best thing about a contract is your ability to negotiate. You don't get what you deserve. You get what you negotiate. So I was telling Marcelo and Jonathan this at the end of the night. One of the reasons they're able to get my services, they get me coming back over and over, is because they will negotiate with me. They will negotiate. Sometimes I screw up and I've made mistakes. And that's why I'm kind of talking about this anyway, because Marcelo made a mistake. Cool. I get it. He made a mistake. But you know what? I made some mistakes before as well. One particular show, I had put guys in the wrong weight class. And I called Marcelo and said, hey, I got a goofball. And he let me restructure. We had four fights. And he went to the opponents and I restructured all four fights. I just changed. We didn't add new guys. I just changed who was fighting who. I think it was like 2 weeks out. And he let me change who was fighting who. The opponents agreed. And it worked out for everybody. Everybody got the fight. And I was like, man, he let me do that. That was great. I love being able to negotiate with people. And that's what you got to get good at when it comes to this fight game. We're moving into a new era. This is not, you know, your coach do everything for you. And it just happens. A lot of you new fighters have a lot of say-so. The Pius brothers, to me, are really starting to really understand. There's a lot of say-so. It's a lot of things that they can kind of get away with. It's just a matter of open up your mouth. But you still have to be knowledgeable. And some of us older coaches, fighters, we have to be there to tell them these stories that happened in the past so that they can get some ideas and how to move forward. Because a lot of the promoters are inflexible. They don't want change. They want things where they can control it the most. All right. But honestly, guys like the Paez brothers have done such a good job. That's why I keep telling everybody, get your social media up. Make it hard for them to reject you. Because once you become a force in this game, man, you can be the headline. You can be the guy with the title shot. You can be the guy making the most money. You can get the pay-per-view points. But you're not going to get it if you don't say anything. And of course, yeah, at a basic level, you have to be good at what you do. Be very good at what you do. And if you are good, what good is it if you're the best knockout artist, submission artist, and nobody's ever heard of you? What good is that? That's not going to get you in the UFC. What's going to get you in the UFC is that recognition, is that buzz. And that's what the Paez brothers are doing. I mean, damn, they brought their little brother. It's three of them now, and they all won. I can't think of another show where three brothers have won on the same show. I can maybe think about teammates winning. I can even possibly go with two brothers on a local show. Now, we see it all the time in big promotions. We know, like, over in One Championships that the whole family won one night. All right, but that's different. That's a bigger promotion. On a local little show, you know, that's getting about 1,000 to 1,500 people, when have you ever seen everybody in the family win? It just doesn't happen, unless the fights are fixed. It just doesn't happen. And I'm not going to say boxing because I don't go to enough local boxing. I've been to a lot of big time boxing, but not enough local boxing to say, does it happen there? I just think a lot of the Paez brothers, because everybody laughed at me when I said, oh, they're going to do this and they're going to do that. I know people were thinking, I must be as delusional as they are. No, they have skills. But they play that persona. I love it. And you know what? And since we're talking about weight, yeah, the Baez brothers have been notorious in the past too for coming onto the scale 4 or 5 pounds over. And somehow there was no criticism there. The fight still went through and they were still able to do whatever they were going to do. My thing is, if you know that's a problem with your weight, say something early. Don't wait until the day of the weigh-ins to create a little confusion or drama. Just say something early. The more you get a reputation for being professional, the more people want to deal with you. They don't have to like it. They don't have to like it, but they'll realize, okay, you are trying to satisfy the agreement to some degree. And they might be ticked off with you, but you're trying. And I think that's what a lot of coaches care about. One thing I suggested to a lot of coaches that I do, I don't care if I'm friends with them or not. If I feel like there's going to be a discrepancy, I will reach out and say, hey, I've got this guy at this weight. Can we change opponents? Can we do whatever? I try to take it upon myself to make those agreements. I like to say, I'll reach out to a coach and say, hey, I've got this fighter. He's got 1 year experience. He's not fought that much. He didn't come from wrestling. He's a legit guy. And let's match my guy with your guy and go find a promoter. If they agree to it, that's when I reach out to Marcelo or whoever's running the show, because I want those two guys to be matched up. I don't want them manipulating my guy where they, like, for instance, don't take my guy and say, oh, your guy's 1-0. Well, we've got a 1-0 in MMA as well. And then when I go and do the research, that guy's also got like 75 kickboxing matches. That you can't do that to your fighter. That's your job to figure all this out. That's your job. If you have concerns about weight, that's your job to get behind the scenes. Here's one of the things I've done. I can't remember the fighter. Promoter reaches out and says, we've got this guy who wants to fight your guy at 150, 155. I said, okay, let me look him up. And so when I look him up, the guy had been defeated in his last two fights. Guess what weight class? 185. Now, I go up and down his record. I can't find any evidence where he's ever fought at 155. So I reject the fight. So they try to shame me and say, oh, come on, the guy's not that good. I said, no, that's not the problem. I believe my guy could beat him. I said, but the problem is he's never made 155. He's never even come close. So my concern was, I don't want my guy to train that hard to have the fight rejected or that he pull out. That just recently happened last year when I had Mike Hunter getting ready for a fight and his opponent was supposed to make 170. We agreed to go up. Mike was normally a 55. Mike said, I'll fight him at 170. And 2 days before the show, I reached out to Marcelo. I said, hey, Marcelo, this guy ever come back and confirm? That's another reason why you want contracts, because they have to confirm the fight in a week in advance. So here we are 2 days in advance. And Marcelo says, oh, my bad. The guy decided not to take the fight, couldn't make the weight. So you want to check out all these details, because there's having a fight advantage is not the only reason that weight matters. It's not the only reason why contracts matter. Because we agreed to the fight, and here we are sitting on hold and we had no information. And that's why I say, if you get involved yourself, get better at getting involved yourself, talk to the people you need to talk to, because that's what the matchmaker is for. Whoever the liaison is, that's his job to talk to everyone. Whether that's your coach or whether that's fighter, wherever the concerns are coming from, you take it to the liaison. He's the guy that's supposed to be answering his phone. He's the guy that should be answering every email. So don't be shy about that. And don't let them lean on your inexperience in this game. That's how you get experiences, by talking. My first experience of taking fighters to King of the Cage or any promotion, really, it was just me calling every day. And that calling and not really understanding and calling and getting little bits and pieces, guess what? In the end of the day, no matter how that fight went, I kept getting experience. I kept getting smarter. Same thing when dealing with HBO boxing, Showtime boxing, pay-per-views. I didn't know. In the beginning, I just don't know. So yes, contracts. And again, weight is just being professional. Make the weight, but I'm still not 100% sold that extra weight is going to give you an advantage, a physical advantage. Ladies and gentlemen, that's all I got for today. Chris Stansel, I see you still here. Look, get in the gym, cut some damn weight, man, and get closer to your normal weight class. I am Coach Sess. You've had words with the Mad Coach.